It's showtime.
Now, back to the Kim Pagano Show on News Talk 1520 KVTA.
Welcome back, everyone, and thank you for all the calls. And again, our phone number here is 805-419-0008. If something that we're talking about excites you and you want more information, just give us a call, and I'll let you know how to get their book or how to get in touch with them. And, you know, there's just so many things that I love bringing great guests on. So our next one is all about money and your relationship with money. It's just money. So why does it cause so many problems? Karen Lee is our next guest. Karen, are you there?
I am. Hi, Kim.
How you doing?
Doing great.
Good. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And your book, It's Just Money, you know? I mean, why is it so? It's like an emotional thing, you know, where, I mean, and just in my relationship, I'm the saver, my husband's a spender, you know? We talked a little bit about that, right?
Great.
Yep. Even though I'm blessed to have him, because I probably wouldn't have half the stuff that he bought for me. So, you know.
Well, and I think for me, it was part of why I wanted to write the book. I'd been in financial planning at least 15 years, and I've been in 25 years. But in that first 15 years, I thought, you know, it's pretty easy to deal with money and handle it and explain to people how to build a strong financial health. But back in 2000 through 2002, during that market decline, and again during this most recent 2008 and 2009, I realized how many people just really weren't following the full financial plan, and I was depressed. I mean, I went into this business to help people, and I think it's a pretty, in my mind, a pretty easy process to become financially sufficient over time. And so I started thinking a lot deeper about why some people struggle and some people don't, and then I started asking more questions of my clients, and yeah, I came up with the fact that this whole money story is not logical and rational, which is how financial planners approach finances.
Well, let me just kind of stop you right there. You know, is most financial planners, you have to have money in order to really work with them, correct? And
correct.
Yet, people that maybe are, you know, having a hard time with money, those are the ones that really need financial planning.
Well, there's several different kinds of advice that you can get, and I've actually done a segment on CNN on this one that, you know, a lot of times people will meet me out at a cocktail party or wherever and say, oh, you're a financial planner, I really need your help. As we talk further, I realize they actually need a different kind of help than what I do.
They need a hair therapist instead, right?
They need a hair therapist.
There you go.
They might need a debt counselor. If they're in real bad shape, they might need a bankruptcy attorney.
Mm.
They might need a therapist, which is what I'm starting to realize, is that some people have the means, but they don't have the follow through, and it's because there are emotionally based issues for them around money. And so it might be something a therapist could help them with.
I was going to ask you, is it possible to change somebody from being a spender to a saver and somebody from being a saver? Well, you don't want to change them from being a saver to a spender necessarily, but is that even possible?
Yes. Is it likely? Probably
no.
Not. I'd go down the path of what's the likelihood of getting an alcoholic to quit drinking?
Well, doesn't
about
it
About 15% max, I think, 10 to 15%. I don't know if it's quite that bad, but I think that the first step is the awareness. Do you know that a lot of people don't see themselves as spenders or don't see themselves as savers, and they don't see the problems that those behaviors are causing in their life? So I'd like to start with the awareness.
Right.
Figuring out why they spend
or why they feel like they can't spend.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But the reason behind.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So I think it might be easier for a saver to become a spender, but I don't know if that's true because, again, in 25 years of talking to people about money, I've seen it all. And I have seen what I call money hoarding.
Yeah.
You know, millions.
I mean, you hear about that where people have died and they're like, they were living like they were poor and yet they had so much money. I mean, that's got to be like carrying emotional baggage from your childhood. I mean,
I was going to say the generation of depression babies.
Right. Yeah.
There was a lot of that.
So how different, though, would that dysfunctional behavior be, Kim, than the person who makes 100 a year but lives on 250?
Oh, definitely. I mean, and there's right? so many. I mean, that's why I thought this was so important to talk about, because there is so many. I mean, this is what we're all living in right now. That's what just happened this last, you know.
It is. There was a lot of people who bought houses over their what they should spend. They lived off of the amount of money. You know, they were living way past.
They had to be in their house.
Right.
Right.
They were living past their means.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I did a little research on this. And, you know, one of the things is if we live beneath our means, do you think that can solve most of our problems?
Uh-huh. Most of what problems? Your personal problems or our society's problems?
No, money problems. You know,
personally?
If you can live beneath your means. So meaning, you know, I mean, Karen, what do you think?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you're preaching the choir.
Yeah,
here,
you're right. You're on my side.
I live way beneath my means. But first of all, yes, if you can live beneath your means consistently and over time, absolutely, you're not going to have money problems. But who else is speaking on the phone with us?
We got Sharon and Marcia.
Marcia.
Okay, so... So we got three of you over there.
That's
okay,
right.
So somebody said something about the Depression era.
Correct.
People. And what I wanted to point out was that we've had a tremendous generational shift. The first 50 years of this century and the last 50 years, the first 50 years, people came, when it came to money, they came from a place of lack, desperation, mm-hmm. and fear. And that had people more than not to live beneath because they were scared.
Well, and what cash. Happened? And they lived with cash versus living with credit.
Perfect segue. Then 1950, the first credit card comes out. The next decade, and then let's say the next 50 years after that, we become a generation of people who never used cash. It's even worse now. It's all done online. I mean, who's walked into a bank recently, right?
Yeah,
right.
And we've lived, and God forbid our children have lived, through the most affluent time ever in America.
I agree.
And so can you see how the pendulum would swing way over to abundance and excitement and let's spend, and there'll always be another way to make a buck.
Right. And, you know, I mean, I come from the era of layaway. You know, you didn't get what you wanted right off the bat. You would have to work for it. Do you think anybody works for it now? I want it now, and I'll pay later. So
it's even better than that. Now it's pay now, and you don't even have to pay for two more years.
This is true. Right? Or there's a lot of people that I remember, you know, where they'd pay off one credit card to cover the other credit card, and that, you know. So they were never, I mean, they really weren't living a real life, and I think that's where the bomb went off for, you know,
you know, it
everything.
Is interesting, though. I have three children, three teenagers, two that just went to college, and one that's, this is Marcia, by the way, and one that's a senior in high school, and I have consistently over their life given them the same amount of money,
mm-hmm.
You know, for an allowance. Mackenzie, my daughter, who's the 17-year-old, saves every penny. I mean, I can't even tell you how much money she has. She hoards money. She saves it, and she's saving to do something specific when she's 24. Now, my other two sons, one of them is just a spendthrift. He buys, you know, he wants to buy presents for people all the time. And my second son, he's kind of in between, in the middle. And I raised them the same, but they have a completely different view of what money is.
That's one of the things I find very fascinating. And I always point that out when I give talks, is that so often children raised from the exact same parents come out differently, because it's not just what you were taught about money and the message you received about money. It's what your brain did with that information.
Absolutely.
So, for example, I was raised by an immigrant. My dad was an immigrant. He had raised us with this poverty mentality. I grew up thinking we were poor. Now, I could have gone in two directions. I went in the same direction he did. I said, oh, my God, there's not going to be enough money. I better save, be very, very careful what I spend, clip coupons, et cetera. But I could have gone the other way, which is I felt so deprived growing up I can't deny myself anything.
Right. I mean, you do have it, or, you know, you can go on whichever road. You know, what's interesting
is
my
psychology.
Right. My parents shared with us, oh, this is a bad week. You know, they were all, they own their own business. And so we would hear, this was not a good week, you know, and so I would be like, oh, well, I mean, I think that's where I got it from is I better save for a rainy day. And where my husband, on the other end, he's like, let's live to the fullest today. I mean, that's a rough thing on a marriage,
now,
too.
The other thing you just pointed out that I think is interesting is that I don't think parents today talk to their children that much like our parents did about what's going on with money. I think we, you know, it's just become a quieter subject.
Right.
Until your kids go to college and you're applying for, you know, they basically find out everything you own.
There you go.
It was really an interesting thing. And you know what? That was the best thing that ever happened because my kids realized that we have not been spending. We're not spendthrifts, that we have saved for their college education, for them to go to school. But we're also making them responsible to pay for part of their schooling, too. Because I think
good for you.
I think you appreciate it more if you have a dime in it, you know, as they say.
Karen, that's my next question, you know, which I know we're bouncing around, but there are so many things that we could talk about. You know, I mean, do you think that giving your kids everything helps them or hurts them?
No. Hurts them.
Yeah.
Hurts them. The other thing is, I believe, now I raised my kids, I have a 16 and almost 20. I do not feel like I gave them everything. I felt like I was extremely conscientious. We shopped at off-brand places. They got low-end allowances. One thing I terribly regret was not making them work in high school. My generation, which is the same as you guys.
That's right.
You know, we said, no, focus on your studies.
Yeah.
Well, and it's almost like they don't have enough time because if you're in a sport and in school... And in an after school, like my daughter's in theater, she would have to work at 2 a.m.
I can see that point, but I feel having just with what I'm going through with my son, I think he could have really benefited by working and financially understanding the flow of money.
I think totally really agree
them.
With
you.
You
know, my son.
Now, back to the giving them everything. So here I'm a person who made plans specifically not to give them everything, bought the old car, not right when they turned 16, just when they needed one. We live in an older, not ostentatious house. But I can tell you they're still more entitled than I ever was. And I think, again, generationally.
I agree with
now,
that.
I live in Atlanta. You guys live in California. Maybe it would be different if you lived on a farm in Iowa or Kansas. But I can tell you here in Atlanta, Georgia, even the kids that live in the apartments have just as nice cars and shoes.
Well, the funny thing, you know, just the cell phone thing. My husband, everybody has their issue. My husband's issue is that he didn't think that they should have the high-end cell phone until they went to college. They didn't need internet on their cell phone.
The data plan, right.
The data plan.
Right.
It's almost impossible to find a phone without a data plan. But my two sons went to college. They got but my daughter, at one point, there was a test. She had to put her phone in this basket. Everybody had to put their phone in the basket. She was literally the only one without an iPhone out of 60 kids.
How do we handle that? How do we rectify that? We're living in an age now where our children are embarrassed that they don't have the top technology, but we're on the side of being a parent saying, I shouldn't be giving my kid everything.
Yeah. And you know what? My sons would have been embarrassed. My daughter thought it was hysterical.
Oh, God, love her.
She thought
it
was...
I wish she was mine.
Oh, she's the saver, remember? She thought it was really funny. She's like, you know,
You guys are crazy because you all spent your money on that.
Yeah, and I don't need that yet. Right? Yes, when I go to college and I need to do that on my phone,
and
that's fine.
And I can tell you, my son would have curled up in a ball and come home totally embarrassed.
So would have my spendthrift son. He would have, too.
My son wouldn't, but my daughter does. I have two.
And I have four children, Karen, and two of my kids are savers and two are spenders. And it's just interesting to see, you know, and some of them, you know, like the ones that have money, they have a lot of money and they'll be like, Mom, can I have money? What about your money? You know, and it comes to that point, you know, it's like, well, I don't want to spend my money.
Do you need something? Sure. Like my son wanted to do this program. This is my son that's in college. And he's going to be a personal trainer. But it was $1,000. And we I said to him, I am willing to invest in you, but you have to invest in you too. We'll give you $500. You put up $500. He was so thankful for that.
See, isn't that interesting?
That's
and that's good because if you just gave it to him, he'd be like, it's not my money if I, you know.
Right. And so I figure he'll follow through and actually make money at it because he's put some of his money in.
Yeah. I really think that's the bottom line is that you have to invest in yourself. And so when your parents give you everything, you're not invested.
My daughter used to be one who used to say, my son would work and, you know, be very cautious with money. My daughter used to be the one who wanted, buy me. And now she's changed and she'll say to me, will you pay half? I'll pay half. Will you pay half?
Yeah. Or what started this with my kids is I told them, you have $300 to buy every piece of clothing you need to buy for school, including shoes. And you can spend it you want to buy a $200 pair of shoes, great. You'll be wearing underwear to school all year long.
Yeah, you won't have anything else.
Now my kids go to school with a uniform, so it kind of changed. But at the time, it was like, okay, this is eighth grade. And you should see, they came home with a lot of clothes and not very expensive, where before they would have bought expensive clothes.
I think that's part of why I like to see them have a job at some point, so that they can see how long it even takes to build up to $300.
That's right.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Karen, what I want to ask you is, how do my listeners go about looking at their own, you know, discovery of who they are, what their relationship is with money?
So I like to start by suggesting that people write a money biography of themselves.
Never heard of that. Okay, I like it. See?
I actually learned it up in California there. I went to a money coaching institute up north in Petaluma, California. In fact, Deborah Price would probably be a wonderful guest to have at some point.
Okay.
But her program, she starts you with writing your money autobiography. You start with thinking back to your earliest childhood memory that related to money. And you write, so you might write, the earliest thing I can remember is age 5, and so write down, you know, 5, 6, 7, all the way up to your current age. And then try to write everything of significance you can remember around money, from gifts that your grandparents gave you to your first job, to asking for a raise, to getting married. And what did you guys do with money? Did you combine everything? Did you separate? Did you get a divorce? Every single thing you can think of that significantly impacted anything that you remember. Because if you remember it, it probably impacted you.
That's interesting.
Then you want to write down next to the top, what happened, how you felt about it.
How your emotional
value
of money. Right,
feel.
Okay.
I remember Grandma gave me a check for my birthday. I wanted to go to the store and spend it, and Mom said I had to save it and build up for more. How did that make me feel? I was mad at Mom. I wanted to spend it right away.
Right.
Whatever. And then go all the way through. I think the things that happened in our childhood can be very dramatic. And some people have more memories than others from childhood. But then there are some pivotal times in people's lives, like first job, for women, asking for raises at your job. Trying to get promoted.
You know, as you're saying this, you know, I did recently do something similar to this. And I remember, you know, where I was a waitress and I would take my paychecks and put those away. And only it was like my own little game. I'm only going to live off my tips. You know, I mean, and I think people have a lot of games. What I do with my children is if they get, you know, a check or if they are working, they only get to spend they get half of it gets put away, and then they can only spend half, because if they spend it all, they're not going to have anything left. So they still have to half it again. And so I think that's something that I've always done in my entire life. So I don't know.
So what would be interesting is one day for your kids to be looking back and go, remember when Mom we'd get a check and Mom would make us save half and spend the other half. Now, how did that
impact their life? Yeah.
Right? How did that impact my life later on? Did I keep doing that?
Right.
And I've always become a saver?
Or did I rebel?
Right. Did I rebel? Exactly. So first you want to get all of that kind of down. And then you need to find a trusted friend or counselor or minister or if you have a financial planner that you like.
Right.
Someone that you can kind of go through that with and start to zero in on what exactly is my problem? You know, so my problem is when I went through that process, my problem is what I call fear of never having enough.
Mm.
And I wrote in my book about the different problems that I see that people have. So some of it is just going to be, that, and Kim and I spoke about this, what I call money baggage from your childhood.
Right. I like that money baggage.
Money baggage, right.
What are some of the similar problems that you've seen through, you know, through learning more about this?
We have the classic people that spend beyond their means.
Correct.
We have people that have what I call sudden wealth. Mm-hmm. And they it's not long term. And they, unfortunately, most people that come into sudden wealth, and, you know, when we think sudden wealth, we think lottery winner, we think NBA or NFL player. But I'm talking about a salesperson even who just had a banner year, could be a real estate agent. And, you know, they were used to making $100,000 a year, and all of a sudden one year they made $300,000. And they thought, oh, my God, now I earn $300,000. And
yeah.
They upped their lifestyle to that new level.
And then...
But it doesn't continue.
Correct. Oof, yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, I read an article that NFL players, only 9% of NFL players have a significant income after they get out of the NFL.
Yeah.
Most of them go broke.
Yeah, I wrote a blog 2 weeks ago on that. There was a great special on ESPN. You can watch it online. It's on their 30 for 30 series, and it was actually called Broke. And it made the best statement I'd ever heard. It said, the NFL, or the NBA, is not a career. It's an opportunity.
Wow, definitely.
And I thought, that's it. So sudden income, sudden wealth, it's an opportunity. A person can set themselves up for life, but they can blow right through it and be no better off.
Definitely.
So we've got this living beyond your means, the sudden wealth. The other extreme, of course, is me, fear of never having enough. And I can promise you people can change because I have changed. I haven't
me
become
too.
A wild
me
spender.
Too. Yes. You know, it's funny. I remember, seriously, just walking through, because I think at my age, I'm finally decided that, you know what? I earn it. I'm worth it. Right. And so I walk through the mall thinking, I can pick anything else, anything I want up right now. And even at that point, I'm like, so there's a good sale here, right?
See, I'm the opposite.
Yes,
you are. I'm looking at my life and what I have spent, and I'm just cleaning out. I'm looking for something in my house and can't find it. And I'm cleaning out things and I'm thinking, oh, my God, why did I spend my money on that?
Wow.
I'm the opposite. I'm like, I need.
Have you been a spender?
I'm not a spender.
Well, you want what you want, you go get, correct?
Yes, but I don't spend a lot of money.
Okay.
I mean, like,
when
I go shopping.
A lot of money?
Yeah, we've saved a lot of money. When I go shopping, I get exactly what I want and I leave. And I decide what I'm going to get before I go. I don't shop like most people shop and go, oh, this
we
is pretty, that's
we
pretty.
We call that, like, you're more like
I'm
a
like
guy.
A man.
Yeah. I'm more like, you know, so yeah.
So no, I'm really not a shopper, but I will buy when I need something, I will buy it.
Right.
But over the years, I mean, like I look at, and it's mainly gifts. I look at the things I've given my children, like video games or whatever, and they've got off to college. They're just sitting there and I'm like, oh, why did I spend that money?
Yeah. But they enjoyed it while you did, right? You know, we need to wrap up, and I want to have you back, Karen. And such
I'd love to come back.
Yeah, great segment. You know, my last thing is, do you think that women in general tend to look at money differently than men?
Yes.
Okay. All right. We're going to leave on that one.
Yeah.
You know, give us a hint of what are you thinking?
The main thing I'm thinking is that women, not all, I don't want to generalize, but a lot of women have these tapes that play in their head that include, you know, if they're fearful, the fear kind, I don't want to end up a bag lady.
Mm, yeah.
And the other scary thing for women is, and I have another girlfriend who's a financial planner, and she uses the phrase, a man is not a plan.
Like that a lot.
As we live in this time of feminism and independence, but we were all still socialized, and the young girls today still are, to think that they will get married and a man will take care of them.
I love it. Let's leave on that note. Karen
Good.
Lee, your book is Your Relationship with Money. It's just money. So why does it cause so many problems? Where do we find your book?
You can find it on Amazon.
Okay, perfect.
It's also like to get Barnes & Noble. You can just look me up, Karen Lee. I'll pop up on Google. You can go to my website. You can find a link to Amazon through there, too.
All right. I enjoyed talking with you. This has been
me
so
too.
Much fun.
Thanks
I
for having me.
Definitely have you back. Thank you so much.
Fantastic.
All right. We have, are we going to take a really quick break? You know what? We'll bring our next guest on right now. We have our next guest, which is Sophie Keller. And she doesn't have one book. She's got four books, and they're really these little cute books. How Happy Is Your Home? And 50 Great Tips to Bring More Health, Wealth, and Joy into Your Home. And Sophie, are you there?
I'm here.
How are you?
Very good, thanks. How are you?
I'm great. And
brilliant.
Sophie, you are an actress, a writer, a life coach, and a happiness expert. And how did you get launched onto this personal quest to make other people happy and find happiness?
Well, I actually started very young, at 14, when I had a tennis accident. I was a competitive tennis player. And one day I went to serve and my arm collapsed. And this shooting pain went down my back and shoulder, and I couldn't sit, I couldn't stand, I couldn't do anything. And the doctors said that I wouldn't be better. So I had to go about curing myself, basically. And by the time, at 14, I had been bullied quite a lot at school. I went to, you know, an all-girls school in London, and they tend to be pretty relentless, you know, the girls in an all-girls school,
right,
in England. And so what happened was, by the time I was 14 and I had been bullied for about 7 years at that point, and then I had this accident. So I went to, I had to find ways to heal myself. So I started to do Pilates technique when there was only one Pilates teacher in England. I went to, I studied transcendental meditation, and I practiced TM for, you know, until I was 28, twice a day from the age of 14.
So you were really insightful at a young age.
Yeah.
That's...
And also I went to a therapist. I went to an NLP and a hypnotherapist. And I did something called the Alexander Technique, which is for your posture. And in amongst all those things, as I did those, not only did I heal, but I also became happier. So regardless of what anyone was doing outside of me, Kim, regardless of being bullied, it didn't bother me. Because
wow.
I felt happy inside. And I thought, okay, this is amazing. This is what I want to do. This is, I want to help other people to become happier. I'm going to go and train in loads of mind, body, spirit techniques, clear all my masks and armor. And, you know, that was really the beginning of it. And it was at a time in England when it was, you know, I was really at the forefront of all of this change, you know, self-development, personal
right.
development.
I just want to remind anybody, if anybody's just joining us right now, you are listening to The Kim Pagano Show. We're talking with Sophie Keller, and her book is How Happy Is Your Home? And, you know, we need to look at all of these different things that, you know, you talk about masks. A lot of us
yeah.
don't even realize that we wear masks without even knowing it. So
yeah, and then, you know, again, that comes to you wear masks and armor, and then you attract somebody in your life, and it doesn't turn out, let's say, in a relationship, it doesn't turn out great. But it's usually because you are attracting what you're projecting. So if you're not yourself fully, Kim, how can you magnetize and attract someone who is themselves fully or completely compatible with you? And I know today we're talking about how happy is your home, and you know, you, I know you already mentioned that I have how happy is your love life, how happy is your marriage, and how happy is your health as well. And how happy is your love life, which is for singles, is about sort of, you know, the beginning is about pulling away these masks and armor so you can become more authentic and really attract the right person for you, so you can have a long, enduring relationship.
So, Sophie, this is Marcia, and I'm breezing through your book. And from the outside, How Happy Is Your Home was totally different than what actually it is. And a lot of it is how to bring energy and life into your house and get the stuff
yeah.
that's not working out by positioning the things in your house. And
yeah.
tell us tell us how you figured out this path and where you're going with it.
Well, you know, the how happy is your home is really based on feng shui. And feng shui, I chose my top 50 tips that I think are amazing tips that you can do whether you have a mansion or you have a little bachelor pad. And at the beginning of each book, there's a quiz which you answer, which will show you, you know, take you to the answers that you need. So depending on how you answer the quiz at the beginning, it'll show you the tips that you need. I'll direct you to the tips that you personally need. And the interesting thing about feng shui, if people don't know about it, feng shui actually means wind and water. And these are the two things that move, and flow. And so what it is it's about the flow of energy through our living space. So, again, the air that we breathe and the water that we drink, water and air, right? So whether you're in your own home or not, the energy inside of your home is going to affect your life outside of the home as well as inside of the home.
Because, Sophie, as you're telling this, I'm thinking in my mind, yeah. I don't know why, but, you know, it's funny because I think that I've been working a lot and I've let some things go in my home.
Yeah.
And I need to kind of go through and unclutter and that kind of thing, right? And I look at it, I'm thinking, if I could just take everything out, I mean, my neighbors would think I was crazy, right? Mm-hmm. Take every single thing out and put it on my front lawn. Mm. And start bringing in the things that I love and that make a difference in my life.
Yeah, and absolutely.
And I just think so many of us hold on to, Marcia, you were talking about all the things that we buy for our children and we're afraid to let it go because we've spent our money on it. Our last segment was, you know, all about money. But do we really need all that stuff? I mean, it's really stopping our life. And filling up our life with negative thoughts.
Well, Kim, every inanimate object has an energy, and that energy is going to affect you. So the more, it's very interesting because when I walk into a home that's cluttered, and I do a lot of feng shuiing of homes and offices and that sort of thing, and when I go into someone's place that's got lots of tchotchkes around, right? I know that person's mind is really, really busy and really full up, that it's very hard to have creative ideas when there's so much around you and there's so much energy, you know, so many objects taking up your space. You're absolutely right. You know, I have this sort of 6-month rule, maybe 1-year rule because of the seasons, but if you haven't used something in a year, you know, just give it away, you know, give it to somebody who does need it or do a yard sale or, you know, whatever you want to do, pass it on, really.
Right.
I told my husband we need to pretend that we're moving out like we're moving to Europe and get rid of everything we wouldn't take with us.
Well, Marcia, the funny thing about this, if people are having problems, you know, they want to move house and they can't find a place, a really good thing to do is clear out your place as if you're moving, so you're ready to move.
Right.
So even if you haven't found somewhere, whether you're buying or you're going to rent or whatever it is that you're, you know, however you, but you know that you're moving and you want to move, etc. Even before you found a place, just get ready to leave.
Right. So you're positioning yourself, correct?
You know,
You're saying to the universe, I'm leaving.
Right.
And one thing I saw there was that you were talking about the space like under the beds and how you need to keep that clean. So it's not just about what you see on your countertops or what.
No, it really isn't. Actually, the funniest thing is when I go, everything's clean in the house, and then I go into the, you know, into the cellar or I go into the garage and it's a complete state. And you know that person's mind, it represents their subconscious mind, you know, that continuous chatter that goes on. And so, you know, you can't hide, you know, you shove it in the cupboard and just about manage to close the cupboard and still, that really is giving off an energy for you, you know.
So, Sophie, do you work with people to help them unclutter their life one room, one drawer at a time?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, and do you, how do you live? I mean, you know, do you live by that? I often wonder, you know, you do.
Yeah, oh, I really do. And I have a, look, I am a mom. I have a 3-year-old boy. And, you know, so I keep, you know, he doesn't have a huge amount of toys. He has his toys. But, you know, I keep everything pretty clear and make sure that everything's really up to date. And I actually, the amazing thing is what I write about. So whether it's how happy is your home, marriage, love life, health, whatever it is, I only write what I do. I never, ever, ever talk about or give advice when I don't know and I haven't experienced something.
I like that.
So how do you deal with somebody in your household? Like I love him dearly, but my husband's a military brat. So he was brought up in a military family and moved all of his life. So for him, his things are like sacred, like because his mom gave everything away his whole life. So now he's like,
I'm not getting rid of that, right?
You know, attached to these things. And I'm like, you know, honey, you haven't even looked at it in 10 years. Why would you keep that? So like memorabilia and that kind of stuff. How do you get people to go on with everything?
Well, look, obviously your husband is completely different to you. And what I would do under those circumstances is, you know, have him have a place for all those things if he wants to, you know, hoard things. But he has a specific place for it, you know, so that it doesn't come into, you know, the general living space, you know, or that he has a room for it, or so that it is, you still honor how he is, and that it doesn't affect you in a huge way.
Right, almost like a compartment. This is yours.
Yeah, the amount
is,
of stuff is the question.
It's
not
a lot.
You know, it's how you, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's how you, well, obviously that's a conversation, isn't it?
Oh, we have that over and daily conversation. Yeah. Because you can't throw somebody else's stuff out because then they get all upset. So,
no,
you know,
it's kind of like
process.
The same thing with money. Okay. You know, someone spends and someone saves. Someone saves and someone, you know, gets rid of it's interesting how we all have so many baggages in different, you know, ways. You know, you talk about how to use and place the, and I hope I'm going to say it right, the bug, how do you say it?
Bagua.
Bagua. What is that?
Well, the bagua is a tool that I use, that in the kind of feng shui that I use, which is the Western style of feng shui, which is a kind of map. And the map shows you where different areas of the house are, what they represent. So the front door is, you know, you place it so that the front door is at the, you know, is basically the front. So the front door will be, you know, the career, knowledge, or helpful people area. And you've got different areas of the house. So we're covering marriage and relationships. We're covering wealth and money, family, knowledge, career, helpful people, and fame and health. And I probably said fame twice then. But what it is that, you know, in this Western style of feng shui, different areas of the house represent different areas of your life. Now, the interesting thing is about feng shui is I find that it's scientific and creative at the same time, because I can't give you answers to why it works, but I know that it works, you know, in terms of if I'm, you know, my neighbor, for instance, a few years ago, I told her, look, you need to put some flowers and plants in this area of your house. And it was the helpful people area. And about 4 days later, she got offered a job. I had a writer come up to me from Mad Men. And I work in an office where a lot of us are writers. And he said to me, oh, my God, Sophie, I haven't seen you for years. Last time I saw you, you came to my house. This was about 6 years ago. You feng shuied my house. And then a few months later, I met my wife.
Wow.
And I said, I'm so glad you told me that. I'm going to put that in the front of How Happy Is Your Home?
There you go. There
you know? So it works, and it's, you know, it's something that's very tangible that we can all do, or, you know, you can get someone to help you to do.
So, Sophie, what should we be asking ourselves about our home? When you have a quiz, how happy is your home, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so how often do you clear out the clutter in your home? Okay, and yeah. There's on here, you know, do you find it difficult? I clear out the clutter once a year, or I throw things out as I come across them. And, so you have that test, correct?
Well, I have, at the beginning of each book, there's 20 to 25 questions, which when you answer them, you really do sort of are led to answers that are going to be helpful for you, where your house is, needs a bit of help, or where you do. I mean, the other interesting thing is, I have questions, like you said, about the home, but I also have them like, which area do you need to focus on most in your life right now? Is it A, career and money? Is it B, relationships? Is it C, health?
Mm. So, Sophie, right? If you needed help in one area, could you do one little thing and would that work, or do you have to do everything?
Well, if somebody had an issue around, say, relationships, I would look at the front door. I would look at their bedroom. I would look at their relationship areas in area in every room of their house.
Wow.
And I would start to clear and shift those, bring energy into those places.
So are you saying you look at so each room, you do the map for each room as well as the map for the entire house?
Yes. When I do someone's house, or when I do an office or company office, I look really at, first of all, I look at the floor plan before I see the house. And then I just see what's going on in the house in general, from the shape of the house, which is really important, where the front door is, whether the front door's hidden from the street, whether it's not. I look at the shapes of the room. There's a lot that goes into it that's quite technical as well as creative. And then the interesting thing is, which is a little left of field, but I'm also a psychic intuitive, and I've worked one-on-one with private sessions and also with the feng shui. I add that into the mix when I do somebody's house. So intuitively and psychically, I know what's going on as well. So I have, a couple of layers and levels that I work on.
Right.
And actually did this for CBS for 48 hours and also did it for the KTLA morning show where I had my own balanced life segment. So I did.
So just what is one or two or three of the most, I would say, popular problems people have, but the things they do wrong the most often?
Well, I think it's their places are more cluttered than they need to be. And things do build up, just like you said, they just do build up. And it's a matter of clearing things out, whether it's a closet, whether it's, whatever it is, and keeping things. The other issue that I think is when something's not working, people take a long time to fix it. And when something isn't working in the house, Kim and Marcia, it means that something's not going right. When you have problems with the sinks, for instance, with the drainage, it's usually connected to money.
Really?
Yeah. You've got problems with your burners. That's connected to money.
Really?
Meaning your stove.
Right.
Yeah, I got you. My whole family's from England. So
right,
London.
You totally.
So you know the lingo,
but right?
So... And so if you were going to, this is so interesting. It really is. If you were going to look at your relationship in your bedroom, but then you also say you have to look at your front door. First of all, what would be some of the things that you would change around in your bedroom? Could it be the way where your bed is?
Yeah. Well, the number one thing is where your bed is. You want to make sure that you've got you are the furthest distance from the door, right? And you want to make sure that you have the whole view of the room and your back against the wall. Now, when I met my husband, Oliver, I went into his house, you know, when we first met, and he had his bed floating. It was like this bachelor pad. I almost expected lights to flash on when you put the, you know, and the bed to do a dance. But it was in the middle of the bed, was sort of on a platform in the middle of the room with the window behind him, but the bed was sort of floating in the middle. So it was a
bit... poor Oliver, he thought he was so creative, right?
I'm surprised you didn't run the other way.
It was like a chick magnet, right? Yeah. Which is what he wanted, obviously.
Right.
But the only problem is that he couldn't sleep a wink in it.
Oh, my gosh.
That's funny.
What about mirrors in the bedroom?
Yeah.
What about mirrors in the bedroom, those big door mirrors?
Look, I don't mind those so much. There's so many different opinions about, you know, those mirrors. And.
But what about a mirror over your fireplace that looks...
Yeah, I like that.
You like that?
I like that a lot.
Okay.
I really
so
do.
So is that just an opinion or, you know...
No, it is a feng shui. It is a feng shui. You know, the fireplace... You know, there aren't many great areas for a fireplace, right? Because fire is fire, right? So you put it in the far areas of the home. You can put it at the back of the house. It's really good. But the minute you put it at the front, you know, your career can go up in smoke.
So let me ask you, get back to the front door. How could you change your front door? Right.
Well, you can't change your front door if you're using your your front door. Your front door is your front door. But it's the pathway that leads to the front door. It's also, you know, what do you have around the front door? Do you have loads of shoes? Do you have strollers? Do you have everything, you know, can you open the door properly?
So you're looking at clutter, right? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know what it's like with kids as well.
I call it the come and dump. They dump things
exactly.
Just right inside
That's
the door.
Exactly right, literally dump. I mean, I'm lucky I have one, so I've got one pair of big shoes from my husband and a pair of little shoes from my boy.
I love it. Okay. You know? So it's not something that, it's more the clutter that's around that you would say to get rid of, correct?
I really would. I really would say that the clutter is really important. And then we look at if the front door is facing the street or if it's not. Now, if it's not facing the street, then we need to fix that as well with opportunities that come in through the door. If you imagine it like this, right?
Yes.
If you imagine that the road is like the sea, the ocean, right?
Right.
And then the pathway is a river. And then you get into the front door and then you've got the rooms, which are the tributaries.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And you want everything free and flowing.
Oh, then my house is good. Okay,
yeah,
good. I like it. Yeah.
So, okay, I have a question. I have an English... arbor in front of my house, and it has a half gate that's not solid gate. It's kind of a...
Yeah.
I don't know what you call it. It's wood that's, you know. Well, should I leave the gate open?
Yeah.
No, that's your front door.
Is at the street. The street, I have an English arbor over the walkway, and then there's a half of a gate there that... You know, you open and close as you come in.
So you're right. Thinking the flow isn't
there.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's...
What's your thought on that, Sophie?
You're saying that you've got a gate at the end of your path.
Right.
Correct.
Right.
But it's not a solid gate. It doesn't, you know, it's a half of a gate.
But you have to open the gate in order to walk into your house, up the path.
Right.
Right. Okay, well, I mean, you will consider that as the front door.
No.
Oh, no. She's...
No, no, what I'm saying is you will consider it as your front, as the front of the house.
Okay.
If you've got the gate there, then your gate's there. You're not going to keep your gate open.
Okay, so that's my front door then.
Yeah, I mean, your front door is your front door, but the gate also sort of opens up, you know, if your gate is on the road and then you walk up and you go into your gate and then the front door's there. Great.
I like it.
Okay.
You know, this is so much fun. And I just want to remind anybody that's just tuning in right now, if you've missed any part of this, you can listen again on my website, Kim Pagano Show. And we're talking to Sophie Keller right now. How happy is your home? Now, you have a subject here, a whole chapter on enjoy better sleep and better sex with these 10 essential principles. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Is that in How Happy Is Your Home?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
You're both at once. Good. Yes. Enjoy. Well, okay. Well, this is what we were talking about, is about the, you know, where is the bed?
Right.
In your, you know, where is the bed in your room, which is really important. And you've got to make sure that you have the bed in the right position. And also, you know, something which I like to talk about, which is I prefer queen-size beds to king-size beds. And this is the reason, you know, sexually, I actually think that your sex life is better with a queen-size bed, not just because you're thrown together, but also because the king-size beds in America have a split down the middle.
Right. And so not anymore.
In the under mattress, in the box springs, but not in the mattress.
Now, we have a water bed, and it's got two different, so we do have that split.
You know what?
Okay, so we had to fix it. This is a fix. I'm giving you a fix.
Okay. Yeah. I want a fix.
Just put a big sheet, red sheet, you know, or pink sheet over the whole, you know, the whole thing. And then just imagine, you know, that your sex life is great.
You know, I'm going to go do that today.
You know, the interesting thing about this is we used to have a double bed, my husband and I. And, you know, it was great. And then I had a neck problem. And so I had to have a bigger bed.
Yeah.
We ended up getting a king size bed as long as we were buying a bed. And we both say that we wish we had a smaller bed.
Yeah, right. My husband says that all the time.
Because we always touched each other.
Right.
And now it's so easy to not, I mean, maybe.
To be in your own places, right?
Yeah. Later age, it's maybe better not to touch each other. I don't know, but
I think it's always good.
I mean, you know, everybody gets so hot.
When everything's falling apart, you mean?
No, yeah. I'm talking about menopause when you're having hot flashes anyway. But I did like having a smaller bed. You're right.
Right. Yeah. You know, now one other thing that I'm going to have you back because you have so many great books and this is
so interesting.
But really quick, because we're coming to the end of our show, cleanse your home with these 9 simple steps. How can we cleanse our home?
Well, obviously the cleansing first has to start with clearing out.
So
right?
Is cleansing like decluttering?
Yeah, I mean, you've got to get rid of stuff first. And then once you've got rid of stuff, then you can start moving stuff. You can start sort of repainting and redoing your house.
Right.
And once you've, you know, then you can sort of start to, you know, just fix things that are broken and, you know, cleanse the walls, wash the walls, or repaint. And, you know, you're shifting the energy in your home. If you've had sort of a bad run of things, it's a really good idea to do that, to really sort of repaint a bit, to re-cleanse things, to really scrub everything clean.
Right.
And then I like to put a vase of flowers in the middle of the room, open all the windows, you know, just let energy flow in and out of the house for quite a while, so that you just shift the energy in the home. And there's, you know, because you come with your energies, and if, you know, you've had an upset in the family or there's been a bit of drama, it's always good to clean and clear the house.
Right. And, you know, it's so funny because my mom's always told me is you change your furniture, you change your luck, you know. And so I think that kind of goes along with what you've been talking about. So, you know, Sophie, I love your accent. I love talking to you. And I can't wait to have you back, because give all the names of your books.
Yeah, we have How Happy Is Your Health, which actually recently I've just done a campaign with Jamie Oliver, and that one's really interesting. I think most people know Jamie Oliver's Food Revolution.
Of course.
How Happy Is Your Love Life, which is if you're single and you want to attract and keep your perfect partner. And then How Happy Is Your Marriage is for if you want to know how to be in a long-term relationship and how to keep it great, really sizzling, then that one is great. And these books are amazing gifts, Kim, because I put them under $10, for a reason, because I felt that these were the kind of books that you hand to a friend, that you buy for, whether you buy it for Thanksgiving or Christmas, you're not breaking the bank, but you know they're going to love it, and you're making a difference to their lives.
Yeah, I can see it tucked
in,
too.
And they love doing the quiz, right?
It's a little basket.
Yeah, give it for a bridal shower.
There you go.
Oh, yeah, lovely. How happy is your marriage, and how happy is your health? Lovely for home. You know, lovely for bridal shower.
Well, thank you, Sophie. I'm going to call you. We'll get you on again because, you know, I know that my listeners will love your next book, and we'll just keep going down each one of them. So thank you so much for joining us.
And people can make contact with me on howhappyis.com.
Okay, perfect. All right.
Brilliant.
You
got
it.
All right.
Thank you
so much, Kim and Marcia.
You got it. All right.
God bless.
Bye-bye. All right. Wow. So many things that we've talked about and a lot of amazing information. I just want to remind you, if you've missed any part of it, you can always email me at Kim Pagano, P-A-G-A-N-O, Kim at KimPaganoShow.com, or you can always call me at 805-419-0008. Marcia, Sharon, thank you so much for being here. Tom, thank you for my show. And of course, I always end all of my shows with a mommy moment, and today's is apologizing doesn't mean you were wrong and that the other person was right. It means that you value your relationship more than your ego. With that, you've been listening to The Kim Pagano Show. You have a great rest of the weekend, and I look forward to talking to you next week, 2 to 4, here on KBTA 1520.